Hello, good morning, everyone. Happy Sabbath. I know a lot of you get dressed up for Sabbath services, even though you're by yourself or in your home watching services on the computer. But I have to admit that I will be quite content to stay in my pajamas. So this is the first time I've actually had to dress up for church services in like 2 months. So of course, the beauty of this setup is you guys cannot see my bottoms. So I could be a good chance that I still have my PJ bottoms on, but you guys will never know. I mean, are these crazy times we're in or what? The coronavirus, the COVID-19 pandemic is really the defining global health crisis of our time. I mean, it really is the greatest challenge that this world has faced since World War II because it affects so many people. And since its emergence in Asia last year, I mean, the virus has spread to every continent except for the Antarctica. And really, even today, months after it started, cases still are rising daily in Africa, in the Americas, in Europe. But COVID-19 is really is much more than a health crisis. By stressing every one of the countries it touches, it really has the potential to create devastating social, economical, and political crises that really will leave deep scars for years to come. I mean, really, you've heard it said that we are in uncharted territory. And many of the communities now that we live in are unrecognizable. Dozens of the world's greatest cities are deserted as people stay home, either by choice or by government mandate. I mean, I love New York City. I can't even imagine what that would be like right now. I mean, across the world, shops and theaters and restaurants and bars are closing. I mean, every day, people are losing their jobs and their income with no way of knowing when normality will return. Small island nations that are heavily dependent on tourism has empty hotels and deserted beaches. It's said that 195 million people could lose their jobs. Well, how are we supposed to react in times like this as Christians? I mean, when asked this question during a virtual group chat in Massachusetts, I mean, people responded by saying, well, it's important to get closer to God at this time. We need to shine as lights in this dark world. We need to be ready to give answer to the reason of our hope. We need to comfort others if we have the opportunity. We need to examine ourselves. Even church leaders said a few weeks ago, that they really are reevaluating church process as a whole and what we can do as a church to improve our preaching to the world. Well, as Christians, what are we to feel for this nation or for this world? I mean, a nation, a world for the most part, that is living in sin, who has left the path of righteousness and is full bore running in the opposite direction of God and his ways. I mean, our nation is so blessed by God, but yet has forgotten him and has sinned horrible sins. I mean, sexual, money, greed, things with honesty and integrity. And not only have they sinned as a nation, as a world, but they boldly persist in that sin. Well, today, I would like to look at just one aspect of this question. How are we supposed to react as Christians in this time? And I think it's something that can not only impact what is happening today, but it can be influential also in the next age. Let's look quickly at a couple examples of this in the Bible. First, let's start in Exodus 32. Exodus chapter 32. We're all familiar with the story here where Moses is up on Mount Sinai receiving the Ten Commandments from God. And it seemed to the people that he was up there for a very long time. So they asked Aaron to make gods for them to go before them. They basically figured that Moses was probably dead. And in Exodus 32, let's start reading in chapter 7. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Go down, because your people, whom you brought up out of Egypt, have become corrupt. They have been quick to turn away from what I commanded them and have made themselves an idol cast in the shape of a calf. They have bowed down to it and sacrificed to it and have said, "These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt." I have seen these people," said the Lord to Moses, "and they are a stiff-necked people. Now leave me alone so that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them. Then I will make you into a great nation." But Moses sought the favor of the Lord, his God. "Lord," he said, "why should your anger burn against your people?" I think it's funny how when God's talking to Moses, he says, "They're your people, Moses." And when Moses is talking to God, Moses is saying, "No, they're your people, God, whom you brought out of Egypt with great power and a mighty hand." Verse 12. "Why should the Egyptians say it was with evil intent that he brought them out to kill them in the mountains and to wipe them off the face of the earth? Turn your fierce anger, relent, and do not bring disaster on your people. Remember your servant Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, to whom you swore by your own self, 'I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and I will give your descendants all this land I promised them, and it will be their inheritance forever.' Then the Lord relented and did not bring on his people the disaster that he had threatened." So here Moses pleads with God to turn from his wrath. He argued what that would do to God's reputation. I mean, Moses interceded for this undeserving people. And here we find Moses influenced God's decision. The Lord relented. So let's look at another example of this intercessory role of an undeserving people. Let's turn to Numbers chapter 14. And in Numbers chapter 14, here we have a people rebelling against God. The Lord told Moses to send 12 spies into the promised land, and only two gave a good report. 10 came back and said, you know, really, they did not trust God. They did not believe in God. So Numbers chapter 14, verse 7, Joshua and Caleb here, it says, "And said to the entire Israelite assembly, 'The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into the land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them.' But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Then the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of the meeting to all the Israelites. And the Lord said to Moses, 'How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me, in spite of all the signs I performed among them? I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them, but I will make you into a great nation, stronger than they.'" And he was talking to Moses. In verse 13, "But Moses said to the Lord, 'The Egyptians will hear about it. By your power, you brought these people up from among them, and they will tell the inhabitants of this land about it. They have already heard that you, Lord, are with these people and that you, Lord, have been seen face to face, that your cloud stays over them, that they go before you in a pillar, that you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And the Lord was not able to bring these people into the land he promised them on an oath, so he slaughtered them in the wilderness. Now may the Lord's strength be displayed, just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love, and forgiving sin and rebellion. Yet he did not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children for the sin of their parents to the third and fourth generation. Verse 19 of Numbers chapter 7. In accordance with your great love, forgive the sin of these people, just as you have pardoned them from the time they left Egypt until now. And the Lord replied, I have forgiven them as you have asked. I mean, again, Moses pleads for this undeserving people, and he influences God. I mean, we see another example here of this intercessory action by Moses. Let's look at another example in the book of Amos. In the book of Amos, and we'll turn to chapter 7. Here, the northern tribes of Israel were treating people badly. And this action was unacceptable by God. And our righteous God was about to bring some harsh judgment on these northern tribes. And in chapter 7 of Amos, God was preparing swarms of locusts and fire. Look how Amos responds in chapter 7, verse 1. This is what the sovereign Lord showed me. He was preparing swarms of locusts after the king's share had been harvested. And just as the late crops were coming in, when they had stripped the land clean, I cried out, Sovereign Lord, forgive. How can Jacob survive? He is so small. So the Lord relented. This will not happen, said the Lord. And in verse 4, this is what the sovereign Lord showed me. The sovereign Lord was calling for judgment by fire. It dried up the great deep and devoured the land. Then I cried out, Sovereign Lord, I beg you, stop. How can Jacob survive? He is so small. So the Lord relented. This did not happen either, the sovereign Lord said. I mean, again, we see this intercession for a sinful people by Amos, a people who did not deserve it. But by his action, Amos influenced God's decision. Remember Stephen's speech to the Sanhedrin? I mean, they were so angry with hearing the truth that he had to say that they started to stone him. Turn to Acts chapter 7. In Acts chapter 7, and we'll read verse 59 and 60. Verse 59 of Acts chapter 7, and while they were stoning him, Stephen prayed, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit. Then he fell on his knees and cried out, Lord, do not hold this sin against him. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. I mean, Stephen here did this intercessory prayer for these people that were killing him. I mean, this undeserving people, and Stephen was praying for them. And really, didn't Jesus do the same thing to us on the cross, to all people on the cross? I mean, these people immediately were trying to kill him. Luke 23, verse 34 says, Jesus said, Father, forgive them. They do not know what they do. I mean, look at Jesus offering this intercessory prayer at the time that these people were killing him. And look, let's go back to Matthew chapter 23. And let's look at the feelings that Jesus was having as he was coming up to this ultimate sacrifice, his death that he was about to give. In Matthew 23, verse 37, Jesus says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who killed the prophets and stoned those sent to you, how often have I longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers chicks under her wings, and you were not willing." I mean, Luke 19, verse 41 tells us that Jesus wept as he looked at the city of Jerusalem. I mean, he must have been thinking about the coming judgment. And he said these words. I mean, Jesus wanted to protect them from the terrible judgment that would eventually follow because they rejected him. He wept at the pain of knowing what would befall these people who rejected him. His heartfelt cry really is just another way to see that Jesus didn't hate these people that he rebuked so strongly at times. His heart broke for them. When we sin, I mean, God doesn't hate us either, right? He genuinely sorrows for us, knowing that in every way, our sin and rebellion only destroys our life. You know, as we look at this world around us, should we not share God's sorrow for this lost humanity? I mean, how often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. I mean, Jesus wanted to protect, to nourish and cherish his people, the Jews, even as a mother protects her young chicks. God doesn't want any to perish. He wants us all to know his love. All of Jesus' actions show us this intercessory grace for an undeserving people. Really, it's a people that includes us. I would like to just look at one more powerful example. Once again, we see the rebellious Israelites. Let's turn to Numbers chapter 16. Numbers chapter 16, we'll read verses 42 through 50. Numbers 16, verse 42. "But when the assembly gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron and turned toward the tent of meeting, suddenly the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron went to the front of the tent of the meeting, and the Lord said to Moses, 'Get away from this assembly so I can put an end to them at once.' And they fell face down. And Moses said to Aaron, 'Take your censer and put incense in it, along with burning coals from the altar, and hurry to the assembly to make atonement for them. Wrath has come out from the Lord, and the plague has started.' So Aaron did as Moses said and ran into the midst of the assembly. The plague had already started among the people. But Aaron offered the incense and made atonement for them. He stood between the living and the dead, and the plague stopped. But 14,700 people died from the plague, in addition to those who had died because of Korah. Then Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance to the tent of the meeting, for the plague had stopped." In incense, right? In times for us like prayer. Again, these undeserving people and this intercessory incense or prayer. I mean, our nation is living in sin. We know what is going to eventually happen. Philippians 2 tells us to have the mindset of Christ, humility, service, sacrifice. I mean, I think that the Bible readings that we have read today show us our actions can influence God. We can have influence on how God treats others, even others who have sinned. We can intercede to delay judgment, to ask God to extend mercy. Well, so why pray? Why pray to God to intercede and delay judgment or to have them extend mercy to this undeserving people? Well, a few weeks ago, our pastor gave a Bible study on the resurrections and how the first resurrection is the better resurrection. Well, pray that some people may respond to what is happening around them, that they may find the truth and act on it. Pray that the church can fulfill its commission, preaching the gospel to all who will accept it. Pray that we can have the heart of Jesus and respond just like he did. I mean, we know what is ultimately going to happen to our nation. We know what's ultimately going to happen to this world. And we know that God has a wonderful plan, and he will bring that plan to an end. But I wonder if perhaps there will be some people in the millennium who are looking at the history of the 2020 pandemic, and they will see a small group of believers that were right in the hot spot of the plague in the United States. People that are in New York, in New Jersey, in Connecticut, who through their bold intercessory prayer served a role like Aaron. They stood between the plague and this undeserving people, and they influenced God.